It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
Okay, let's see. Looks like we are on, except we've got a bit of a problem. Okay, there we are.
Good morning. How are you? I think we got disconnected for a moment.
Are you there, Izzy? Are you there? Can you hear
us? Yes, I'm here. I can hear you.
I'm sorry.
Right. Well, I'm going to need to put you on the side. You guys can talk because I've got to answer the door. The doctor is arriving. So I'll be listening in, but I'll be putting it on quiet at the moment, okay? And then I'll tell you when I'm back.
Okay, thanks, Izzy.
Phew, what a start. It's sort of like stop-and-go traffic.
Thank you for putting persevering through our technical difficulties, but good morning, listeners. John and Lori Wiles from Driving Me Crazy here to tantalize you with this week's car review, which, Johnny, is?
The 2021 Cadillac CT5 Premium Luxury Sedan, and I didn't add this, but it has on the back 550T, which means it's the 330-horsepower V6 engine.
Now, let me start right off the bat by saying a Cadillac is a Cadillac is a Cadillac.
Why did I know you were going to say that?
You didn't know I was going to say that.
It just sounded like that.
However, Johnny and I have a great deal, as always, to say about this vehicle, which we had the pleasure of driving for a week. And, as always, we quote our good friend John Bugsy Lawler, who is an expert, one of the great experts in the automotive field. And as Bugsy says, they don't make a bad car anymore. So we're going to preface what we're going to say with that. Okay, Johnny, you take it away. You can be the fall guy.
Okay, thank you. Okay, it's true it is a Cadillac. For most people, me being one of them, when the words Cadillac come into play, you sort of have a mental image of what the car should actually be like, pretty exactly kind of what it should be like. However, this Cadillac did not live up to my thoughts about Cadillac that I've had for a very long time. I know why, and I can explain why. This vehicle feels smaller, is slightly smaller, has a lot of really very positive things that you would expect in a Cadillac, and we'll talk about all those things. But and the base model, which is called the Luxury CT5, we had a Premium Luxury next, and it actually has four models, levels of the model. But the Luxury starts at $37,000. Now, just think about that for a minute. You're able to buy a Cadillac sedan for $37,000.
And that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think it's very impressive. And you get a lot of car. But there were just a couple of things about this car that did not, in opinion, meet the standards that I've sort of come to set for Cadillac myself.
Now, before we go into that, let me just say this. Any car that is black, has a black interior, and what was the color of the car, John?
Red.
It was infrared. Yeah, infrared tint coat, exterior red. But to the eye, it's I don't want to say it's very devilish. It's very confining. So when you have a black interior, all black interior, no wood grain, which you come to expect with Cadillac, no real trim, but black throughout. You you feel more enclosed than usual in a car like a Cadillac, you tend to feel, and I'm not going to say claustrophobic, but I really don't know what other word I can use. That affected
limited.
Me. Pardon me?
Limited.
Limited, yeah. But that affected me as a passenger and as a driver. And maybe we're getting a little esoteric here, but when, you know, when you're outside and you're, you know, driving around, especially during these, you know, COVID times, as the COVID times, thankfully, are behind us, I hope, it bothered me. That bothered me, but that's not a reason to diss the car. I guess my biggest, the thing that affected me more than that was the drivability,
No, the drivability was good. As far as the driving aspect of it,
it was handling. Yes,
oh no,
yes.
Handling,
okay,
cornering.
Cabin noise.
No. Cabin noise was
felt
higher.
Road.
Yeah, and felt road were higher than I've come to expect in a Cadillac. Those two things alone really bothered me. I just when the Cadillacs we've gotten, especially the big ones that we've gotten in the past.
Oh, they're chariots. They're
yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, and they're quiet, and they're comfortable, and the ride is smooth, and you just kind of glide down the road. And I didn't feel it with this car. And again, I think I can explain it because when you have a Cadillac, first of all, it starts at $37,000, which is pretty low-end cost for a Cadillac. There have to be some sort of changes made. This car isn't as big as the Cadillacs that I remember in the past as far as the sedans go, one. And two, even though they have, it's like air
cushioning.
Something, yeah, air cushioning for the ride, you are, the wheelbase is a little narrower, maybe a little shorter. The road, you felt the road. The road's smooth, the ride's smooth. If the road's rough, you felt the road. And the noise was higher than I expected inside. Was it unbearable? No. But is it, and I told the story in the write-up, you know, I just sort of,
okay.
The article
tells,
that we do in the Yonkers Tribune.
Yeah. The one that Lori tells about, you know, the cake at Christmas and the guy tastes it, and he says, well, it's not up to your usual
standards. Right.
And that was really, that just sort of came into my mind as I'm thinking about the car, writing about the car. It just, to me, it wasn't up to the Cadillac's usual standards. Does that mean it's a bad car?
No, of course
it does not. No, and it has all the wonderful things that you'd want on a vehicle of this nature.
Now, let me point out that in the in the model that we had, the premium luxury, it is all-wheel drive. Now, you can get it without all-wheel drive. You could get it, I guess it's with front-wheel drive. But,
yeah, and standard is a 2.0-liter engine with turbocharging.
And this was a 3.0-liter twin-turbo
V6. Yeah, bigger engine. Super engine.
So I'm wondering if the bigger engine and the all-wheel drive components contributed to the noise and felt road.
Very well may have. But
on a smaller car than you would expect, I think, to have. Well, no, because that's not true. Because you can have a sports coupe and it would be. But then, of course, with the sports coupe, you do feel extra felt road. Maybe this is what it's about.
Well, it is. And that's what I was, when I started this earlier, I said I can explain it. Cadillac is appealing to a different, I think, group of buyers than they have in the past. And that, really, and of course, remember, I'm over 70, so, but Cadillac was sort of, when you bought a Cadillac, it was a symbol that you had made it.
You arrived.
You'd arrived. Same with a Lincoln. If you bought a Lincoln or you bought a Cadillac, it signified somehow that you had arrived financially or whatever you want to call it, that you'd sort of made it.
Socially.
Yeah. It was a big deal, and it still is in my opinion. But Cadillac, because a lot of us are aging out and don't drive as much as we used to.
Oh, come on. Yeah. That's terrible.
Well, it's true.
Age is a number.
I know, but the baby boomers, they're getting fewer and fewer of the baby boomers. And so the younger generation is looking for different things than we looked at. And many of them, we've talked about this on the show before, many young people are not into buying cars. They're not even necessarily into leasing cars.
And in fact, statistics show that it's the 18 over crowd that are applying for the most first-time driver's licenses.
Well, and the younger people, especially now that we've sort of had a shift in the population base, meaning that the population can work from home instead of going to an office, so they're not even commuting to a lot of that, they don't need a vehicle like the older ones that we're thinking about in the Cadillac, the big ones and all that. They're looking for streamlined, cost-efficient, not terribly expensive. And you're going to have a niche in there that's going to pay $30,000 to $50,000 for a luxury car, like they would if they could get a BMW or a Lexus or any of these kinds of cars. So I think Cadillac is competing now with a younger market of people who see Cadillac as a wonderful vehicle, but that needs to fit sort of their lifestyle.
And in taking that opinion, that observation, and applying it to this particular, you know, vehicle, there's a dummy going on here that has confused me. And for example, okay, if this did not have the powerful, if the model which we drove did not have the powerful engine and the all-wheel drive components, then I would say this is a perfect city car for a retired couple.
Yeah, 2.0-liter engine, four-cylinder.
You know,
get around town,
live in the suburbs,
absolutely.
Commuter's car, perfect for that. But
agree with you.
But now they've thrown in this, you know, super-duper engine and also this all-wheel drive, you know, capability. And then...
Well, wait a minute. Two things you brought up. The six-cylinder, 300 horsepower, I like it because when you need power merging into traffic, doing whatever, it's good that you have it. I just like that, one.
Yes.
Two.
However,
wait a minute. All-wheel drive. All-wheel drive. You do have bad weather in some places, especially in the wintertime. This car with all-wheel drive is much more suited to snow, for example, than one without it.
But now you're outside of the suburban market, because I guarantee you that the Long Island Expressway, except for 1 or 2 a.m., providing they're not doing nighttime road construction, there's no way in hell that you're going to ever, you know, need to have a super-duper, you know, fast acceleration to bypass traffic that generally goes at 12 miles an hour. So,
but you might hear, I think, in Pinehurst or getting...
Well, I'm talking about city driving.
Okay.
Now, but add something, honey, to this kind of, you know, overview. I didn't even pick up on this. I'm so embarrassed. But did you realize that this car had a rear split folding seat?
No.
See, I didn't either. And so why would
so
they...
you put it down and you could go through the trunk up into the
right
cabin area? Okay, yeah.
So I mean, but why would they do that unless they were thinking, okay, now more to what you're discussing, of more of a outside of city car, or maybe a long haul, you know, drive car, or, but not a commuter car. I mean, something you.
No,
take.
A young couple who's going to go on vacation. They're headed up in the mountains. They're taking their skis. They're taking their whatever they're taking.
Did you fit skis with that second seat?
Oh yeah.
You
sure.
Could.
Oh yeah. Put that down and run them up through the middle if you needed
but it's
to.
It's still cozy inside, you know.
Yeah. Well, talk for a minute about all the good things.
Oh, I'm sorry, and that's wrong of us. We shouldn't.
Well, I don't want to dwell too much on the things, you know,
we thought weren't up to standards. No,
but
let's open
here are the things that were up to standards. The seating, you had all of the controls, of course, electronic controls for the seating, heated leather seats,
four-way power lumbar.
Heated and air-conditioned, or they call them ventilated
seats. Yeah, ventilated, lovely,
and
lovely.
And it really was, yeah, they were really comfortable.
14-way adjustable, you know, seats.
And memory, so you can set it up and adjust it. Same with the steering wheel, in and out, up and down, that kind of thing, once you set it. Which I've decided over, so that's really when you get in, that's what you need to do, is you sort of need to get your body in position, and then the steering wheel. And once you got that, then you really do have it. And you can set it, and then, you know, then you can always go back to it.
So wait a minute. Now I've got to kind of define a little bit more who this car is for and where it's going to be driven, because I forgot to mention that this car has paddle shifters.
Yeah, and again, I think that's more – we never had that, and you don't use that, but I guess young people do. I mean, younger people do. And let me tell you something about this car, and I sort of held back on this, but with that V6, and if you have a long, long straightaway, say 2 miles and wide open, you can really get you can get that baby up to a big-time speed, so I'm told.
So who's buying this car, sweetheart?
To me, it would... probably younger people who like this idea of owning a Cadillac and finding out that they can actually afford one at somewhere between $37,000 and $50,000.
So maybe this particular model is for that.
Yeah, the CT5, I think, appeals to a younger generation. I really do.
But what about the model that has the standard engine and, you know, front-wheel drive?
Well, I think that appeals to a little older crowd
like you were talking about.
Okay,
so now the various... And
you know, now we've made it. We don't really need all that, and it gets good gas mileage. You're driving around town, and hey, we're in a Cadillac.
And it's still a Cadillac. Let's talk about the options, because here, again, it's important. The options, okay, for a 40,000
Well, start with the engine. I mean, getting the 3-liter 6-cylinder engine was an option.
It's an option, and it costs $3,500. Right.
Yeah.
And the automatic stop-start control is part of that.
Right.
That package. Then the drivetrain for all-wheel drive, that's another $2,000. And then this bothers me. The navigation in Bose Premium Audio Package is $1,350. These days, especially if you've got I know a lot of people depend upon their cell phones, and that's fine. But, you know, when you have a car, especially this model that we're now realizing it's best to recommend for people who like to take a road cruise, a road safari, you know, go the distance, you really do need to have the navigation, and it's nice to have a Bose premium audio.
But that's why they're an option.
And it's an option.
Yeah, if you're my age, and you're driving around town all the time, you don't need navigation. You're not going anywhere.
Now the climate package, which we do feel is important, which is for a grand and change. That's for the driver and front passenger heated seats.
Yeah, and I think that's good.
You know, and the ventilated seats, that's important, and also the steering wheel seated, which you love. I don't care for, but you do. And then the lighting package at $600, the lamps at $500. Those are, you know, also important, but the lane keep assist with lane
driver awareness.
Yeah, that's an option. It's $455. That should never be an option.
Yeah,
that's integral.
Yeah, that's worth the money.
You've got to have that. And then the infrared.
Driver awareness, auto high beam.
Yeah.
Following distance indicator.
Yep.
Lane keep assist.
Exactly.
And lane departure warning. And all
that's
of that was only $500.
Yeah, right.
It's like, I don't know why you wouldn't just include that, because that's the thing. I don't care if you live in the city or you're driving outside.
Especially if you live in the city. Now, the infrared tint code at $1,225.
Yeah, I'd probably pay it just because. I'd pay it just because I love red.
So those options bring your $40,000 vehicle up to $51,000 $6. That's a 20% increase over base sticker price.
Yeah.
And that's significant. That's significant.
One of the things that I did, the article that I wrote this week, was that, and I thought it was a great visual. So if you get a chance, go to the Cadillac. Just type in, just Google, do Cadillac CT5 luxury premium sedan, for example, and it'll get you to the Cadillac
website. Now listen, I'm going to rattle these off because I want to make a point.
You didn't let me finish.
You were not finished?
No, I wanted to say that on that website is a diagram that shows the car, and then it shows all around it. It shows all of the radar, the cameras, all the things that are now built into the car and what they're focusing on to help it be safer. It is the coolest diagram. It really, because it just shows how there's 360 degrees around the car. There are monitors going on.
And that's
just cool.
Now, that is standard in their safety features are.
Yes.
Okay. The rear vision camera, the rear park assist, the rear cross traffic alert, the safety alert seat, which means what?
It vibrates when you, like if you start to cross the line.
Yeah, if somebody's too close, it vibrates.
Vibrates.
Kind of like a massage. The teen driver thing, I would never let a teen drive a Cadillac. Anyway, that lets you know if your teen's, you know, taken off somewhere or how fast they're driving. The forward collision alert, very important. The lane change alert with side blind zone alert, very important. Automatic emergency braking, front pedestrian braking, that's really, really invaluable in a city.
And we ran into this again, pun intended, we ran into this again in parking when you back up, and it alerts you and will stop the car if you start to back up. Because in Pinehurst, it's sort of angular parking, so you can't always see what's coming. But it won't let you back out into traffic that's coming in the opposite lane. I mean, I just think that kind of stuff's good.
And, you know, one thing that's really quite interesting is that the more and more we see these kinds of safety features in almost every car we're getting these days, when we drive a car that does not have all these automatic safety features, we forget.
Well, I don't forget, but I'll tell you what, I'm a lot more careful. When I know that it's not on there, I'm a lot more careful when I'm backing out of a place, because I really look at that camera to see if it's looking for what's coming in either direction and looking over my shoulder trying to see the cars that are on each side of me, especially the lane I'm backing into. And knowing that there's a camera back there that's actually monitoring that and is going to help me make sure I don't back out in front of a car is a big deal. And I don't think it has to do with age. I really think it has to do with knowledge of safety.
Now, you know, we very generally never compare different manufacturers who are coming out with this, you know, a vehicle that is in the same market. But I felt comparing the Cadillac to the Hyundai Sonata that we enjoyed. And, you know, once again, I guess you got to think of it as like a zebra versus a horse. They both have four legs. One's got stripes, the other doesn't. But they look the same in the silhouette except for the mane. The point is that
there's a similarity to the styling, I think.
Well, there was a similarity to a lot of things, but there was not a similarity to what was the price on the Sonata?
$35,000.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. But then again, let me just qualify this by saying briefly that with Hyundai, we are almost always saying you get so much bang for your buck. Now, what do you get with a Cadillac? You get the security of knowing that it's a Cadillac, one of the oldest brands in automotive history, that has always meant dependability and class, high resale value, longevity. So, you know, and that's not to say that's not the same with Hyundai, but when you have a brand like Hyundai, it does not have the owner loyalty, the brand loyalty that a Cadillac has.
Well, we don't necessarily know that. One, I think you're probably right, but there are no figures to look at for Hyundai.
Historical brand loyalty.
But the second thing about that is, and I was talking to one of our friends who was here visiting us the other day, you know, because he was asking about various cars, and I tell him what I know, but I said, well, you have to understand something. All of the cars that we get are brand new. They're 2020. If it's 2020, we get 2020 cars. If it's 2021, we get 2021 or the end, we get 2022 cars. So we're always evaluating new cars, not 5-year-old cars, brand new cars. And so when it says things like J.D. Power's number one in initial purchase or whatever, that means, well, when you get it, it's great. I don't know what it is 2 years from now or 3 years from now. I agree with Lori that historically Cadillacs have always held up. I mean, one of the jokes that a friend of mine who owned Jaguar was, you know, he would say 80% of Jaguars are still on the road today. The rest of them made it home. And it was the idea that they're not very dependable, you know. But Cadillacs have always been dependable, and they've always been good quality vehicles. Is this one a good quality vehicle? Absolutely.
Oh my gosh, of course.
Absolutely.
It is. But you know, when you tell somebody to drive a Cadillac, you know, their eyebrows shoot up to their hairline.
Well, it's back to the symbol, you know, this kind of status.
You drive a Cadillac, but you don't get the same reaction when you drive a Kia or.
Yeah. I drive a Fiat 600. Oh yeah, okay.
I mean, you know, you've got to take things into consideration. Now, this car in Europe would be like considered, you know, a limousine because everything is so much smaller. I mean, the Duchevaux in France and the Fiats. I mean, this is comparably speaking, it's huge. But we've been spoiled in America, haven't we? I mean, the bigger the better, and the more horsepower, the louder the noise, you know, the bigger the room, the greater. I mean, and so in a way, we've been spoiled rotten.
I remember forever I had a friend of ours, Eduardo, who came from Argentina, and he could not get over how much space there was between the houses and how wide the roads were. He kept commenting about that. He would say, I've never seen houses this far apart. And, you know, we live in a place. Well, like he lives in Cordoba, but Buenos Aires, which had at that time 21 million people in the city, I mean, they're on top of one another. And it's amazing when, and again, we talk about the United States, think about England. I mean, you can drive across England in a day, I mean, probably less than a day, but you can't do that in the United States. I mean, we live in an incredibly big country with opportunities that no one else in the world has, which is why, and I've always told this story, but, you know, we have a problem with people illegally immigrating in this country. But Jim Rohn, the great philosopher, said, nobody ever said, if I could just escape to Poland, life would be so much better. You know, nobody says that. What do they say? I want to get to America. And why do they want to get here? It is everything.
The promised land.
It is the promised land. I've been to a lot of countries around the world, and Lori has too. I always love coming home. There's no place on earth like the United
States.
There's
no place like home.
No.
And we are West.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's kind of our rundown on this vehicle. I mean, do we love it?
Sure.
You know.
Is it my favorite
love,
of the Cadillacs?
No,
no, it's not. Yeah.
but again, you know, I still harp back to what Bugsy Lawler says. They don't make a bad car.
Yeah, there's nothing
anymore.
Wrong with the car, period. Yeah, it's a great car.
But, you know, when you have to review a car, you know, it's you have to, like, we're forced. When you review a car, you want to be, you know,
honest.
To be honest. and to give your... your feedback but again this is my opinion and Johnny's opinion.
But we drive a lot of cars.
But we drive an awful lot of cars.
Yeah,
and
it isn't like we're making this. Yeah,
years,
we're not
yeah.
just making this stuff up. So.
No, it's true enough. And what happens is you get kind of what's the word I want, honey?
It's 10:30.
That's the word I wanted. I guess our time is up.
Yeah.
Another fast week.
We'll wait till next week.
Yeah.
Oh, next week. What do we have, honey?
We have a Hyundai Santa Fe.
Oh, the Santa Fe.
Yeah.
That'll be a thrill.
A new
oh,
one.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's cool.
That'll be a thrill. So, Hezzy, our time is up, and we hope you're well and having
yeah,
a good, good week.
Yeah,
we think about
thank
you.
God.
You know, you're in our prayers. Yeah, so.
Well, thank
it's
you
be hot
very,
weekend,
very
so
much.
Stay cool. Oh, you know we love you.
Absolutely. Be well.
All right.
Thanks so
have
much.
A,
for
have a wonderful weekend.
All right.
Thank
take
you,
care.
Buddy.
Be well.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, how wonderful. Now we're going to speak to none other than Brian Harrod. He's the Yonkers Newswire publisher and editor. So we're going to follow him through a lot of the hyperlocal news that concern everybody. And so first of all, good morning, Brian. How are you today?
How you doing, Hezzy? Thanks for inviting me on your show. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for making the time. It wouldn't be worth listening to unless you were on the show, so that's really important. Well, you've got an unbelievable list of subject matter that you wanted to discuss today, and I guess you know the first thing we have to note that it is early voting, primary elections have kicked off, and how do you find that? Do you find that people are voting early, or they're not as much?
Well, what I've been told, Hezzy, is, and it could have changed in the last day or so, but I've been told in Mount Vernon and in Yonkers, anecdotally by people running around, that they haven't seen many people at the polls. And I did see in all of Westchester County on the first day that there was only 700 people out of a population of over a million that, that chose to vote early. In all of Westchester County, from Peekskill to Pound Ridge to Port Chester to New Rochelle to Mount Vernon to Yonkers to Tarrytown, you know, it's not many people. So I guess there's, if you divide it by about those 50 communities, maybe you're getting 20 or 30 people a day. Maybe Yonkers has a slightly larger number with its two polling places, but it's not many.
Yeah. Well, I'd heard that there was a lot of once people realized that their name would be published for having requested an early vote or an absentee ballot, that they were prone actually to being, harassed by people who say, hey, we want you to vote this way or that way. And I think a lot of people got turned off by that. They didn't realize that their name would be out there. And so I really wonder if that's affected them or not.
Intimidation is, it's got a long history in American voting to suppress the vote. I guess it's, we used to always think of it being down south, voting rights, that type of stuff. But apparently it's alive and well in Yonkers.
Well,
people should just be able to vote and not have to worry about their job or their – or just being bothered, being threatened.
Well, I remember when they didn't have early voting or absentee ballots that you would either go to vote or wouldn't go to vote. It doesn't matter. But nobody knew whether you did or you didn't vote. However, after the vote was done, they would know how many people voted from a particular district, or so they could define how many people actually voted, but they didn't know who voted. And so I find that this is problematic. Hopefully the next time there's an election, this won't become public knowledge, because we don't know it when you go to vote on your own and you don't do advance balloting, then I don't know why it should be known in another way. That's what I couldn't comprehend. But there may be a reason, and I don't get it.
Maybe
when we join the
21st century and you can vote on your phone anonymously. then that'll end some of the suppression, I guess.
That actually, Mike, don't they have that in Oregon where you can actually vote that way?
Talk of it, and you have, with these early voting sites, the beauty of it is they have went digital on that. So even though you're from Yonkers, you can show up in Bedford and vote at their site because their, I guess their little iPad or whatever they have there. I haven't voted early, but the little iPad there or device, you know, can find you, look at you. You're a registered voter, and even though you're not from this community, you can place your early vote for the for your community. You know what I'm saying? So it's
I hear you.
The technology's there. The pandemic's proven we have the technology to do amazing things, but you know, the powers that be may not like having not having the ability to intimidate people and to manipulate the vote.
I think that's one of the big issues. Well, one thing we do know is in the primary season, we've got quite a few interesting contests going on. We've got Yonkers Councilwoman Shanae Williams. She presently represents the, what is it, the 1st District. But she's running and engaged in a primary against a longtime county clerk, Timothy Idoni. So
yes.
This is a really big race. He's probably in his early 70s. I don't know how many years he's been in office, but he certainly streamlined the office itself. And not exactly sure what Ms. Williams can bring to the equation. I just don't know. I haven't really heard her speak about, you know, what her intentions would be should she win the primary. And it'll be interesting to see what she would want to bring forward that the county clerk doesn't have yet.
That's what I'm saying. I have the same impression. You know, it's very exciting that there was going to be this challenge, and it got a lot of tongues wagging, you know, like, oh, look what's happening. There is this challenge. But there have been many details of, like, if I become clerk in the first year, I'm going to do A, B, C, D, E, you know, or if I become clerk over the next 2 years or 3 years, I'll do these things, or this needs to be done, or this is not being done properly. So I would like to hear exactly what the plan is, you know. But
what's interesting? You bring up a really good point, and I think that point is that in the past we used to hear people, suggest what they wanted to do or how they could they could resurrect something that wasn't working well. But nowadays I hear a lot of nothing. People can talk a half an hour, but they don't tell you one thing that they're planning to do. I don't know if that's supposed to save them at the end of the day. 2 or 4 years later, you say, well, what have you done? You said you do this, that, or the other. And if you haven't, then you're demonized for it. If you promise nothing, then I guess maybe you accomplished something. Which is nothing.
Yes. You know, and I love to watch business news in the morning, CNBC and Bloomberg. It's one thing I've learned is if you get to where they're reporting about money and how money's being learned, you learn a lot about politics and everything else because everything follows the money. But I saw today it was the lady from Dick's Sporting Goods. And she was talking about they had been studying curbside delivery, and just before the pandemic, because some of their competitors were you could pull up, get your thing, and you don't have to go in line in the store, right? And they were saying they needed 18 months of lead time. You know what I'm saying? To get this to happen. Then the pandemic hit. And they put that thing, you know, they put their curbside delivery together within a few months. You know what I'm saying? You got an app, boom, hit, boom, here it is. And I do think if there was a will with government, local government, like, say, the police department or the DPW or something else, you could get real-time information. You could see police calls. And some communities do that, like a police blotter. You could see you could probably even see where the hell your garbage truck is, you know what I'm saying, if they really wanted you to. You know what I'm saying? But it's much better when we keep archaic systems and then we have excuses if we don't perform well, you know?
That's very true. That's very, very true. That's really on point. Well, also, there are a lot of other things. There are a lot of other contests locally, as you point out, in Yonkers. And One of the biggest issues is affordable housing. And
yes.
And the question is whether we're going to permit 20% housing component or not. And I think that's being reviewed again. So that's coming up and become a very, very important issue. We have a large community of people who need affordable housing more than ever before. Do you think that this is going to pass at 20%? And do you know why it's being held off? What's the difference?
I don't know why.
New building?
And maybe they'll have to compromise between the current 10 and 20. I do know that, in my view, and I think there's been some studies that have shown, yeah, you can build a 100% affordable housing project and create little pockets of poverty in your community, or you can spread it around. And when these developers come for these very large projects, you know, it requires, road work. It requires more street repairs. It requires more police responses. It requires more school, children going to school. It requires a lot of things from the community. So asking to have a portion set aside as affordable for the less fortunate in your community is a good thing, and it mixes up the you just don't want a building or a gated community inside your community only for the wealthy. It'd be nice if you had a few seniors in there, if you had a few disabled people in your community that you might not come in contact with, or young families or something that are just starting out, you know, struggling to make it happen in a community with where they pay half their work pay and rent. But even before utilities.
Very, very true. One thing I missed out, because you did point this out in pre-write-up, you said that in the election results, the pundits are predicting low turnout due to voter fatigue. Are voters fatigued? And is this a year in which the typical drop-off, because it's an off-year election, really make an impact? Because I think it seems very contentious in our city, and even in the county.
Yes. Well, in Yonkers, and in the county too, there's a lot on the line. It's not like a little community like Port Chester or Pleasantville. You know, in Yonkers, you're talking about who's going to control, you know, like $1.4 billion, you know what I'm saying? And the county is about the same amount of money. So things get very contentious in the county elections and in Yonkers because, you know, one vote one way or the other is going to really change the dynamic of who's going to decide how this billion-plus gets spent. But I do think there is, you know, there was an awful lot of to the run-up of going into the election and the voting and a back and forth President Trump and former President Trump and now President Biden. Then with all this, was the election, the big lie kind of stuff, and then now the primaries came so early, and then the primaries have been long. You know, it's been from January till June. You know, we started announcing in January, and then it kicked off in February with the signatures, and now, you know, we're in June. So after 6 months, some people tune it out, in my opinion, but I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. I call it voter fatigue.
Very interesting. Well, one thing that is also very interesting is that a few weeks ago, six members of the city council, they called for an investigation into the city council president. Now it turns out that actually at yesterday's Yonkers City Democratic Committee meeting, out of seven people who sit on the city council, of the seven, of which one is the president, but two are Republican. So five members of the city council were Democrats. They called to investigate the misconduct, the alleged misconduct, but actually they voted him out.
Yes, with the endorsement,
they rescinded their support of him.
I was when that other story came, you know, a couple of weeks ago on the Yonkers Tribune. I was shocked when I first read it there and posted it. I actually had to read it a second time. I couldn't believe all six council persons in a bipartisan manner this over for an investigation. Not even one person said no. And then, but you know, it is what it is. And then I think it was last night I saw it on your site. I don't even think other people have reported it yet. That the Democratic Party took back its endorsement of the of their incumbent city council president. So, if I was shocked before, I was double shocked after that. So things are moving fast. I'm a little, and then Mr. Cater's attorneys were responding and having a back and forth with the inspector general. Just 24 hours before that, it's really hot and heavy.
Well, you know, I remember in my write up, I said it seems like what was going on between Cater and Jeff Buss was who was his landlord, and Cater actually designated Jeffrey Buss as his counsel, legal counsel for the city council president, and I wrote that it seems to imply a quid pro quo because you know, once Jeff Buss got involved, supposedly it seems that Cater had not paid rent any longer. So it's going to be an interesting discussion and see how that gets resolved. I guess there'll be a court case. So we'll see where it goes.
The easy answer would be Mr. Cater just says these people are full of crap. Here's my canceled checks. But it looks like right now Mr. Cater would like to delay anything like that or any investigation or anything about this until after
what's
the election.
What's the purpose
of
that?
I think to win the election, you know, if he says I don't have the checks, but I'm going to write one now, that could really affect the election. If he says this is unfair and it should be handled in September, or it should be handled at the end of the year, he might get the Democratic nomination and eventually retain his seat. You know, I assume that's his thinking, but.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I haven't spoken to him either. The other thing that might be even more important is the allegations of a hostile work environment from a former employee. Isn't that more crucial, especially, you know, men mistreating women or berating them? Heard all kinds of stories that goes on in that office. It's been a long time,
I didn't hear stories about this, but I did hear Shanae Williams said she contacted not just this lady, but multiple other employees who had a similar experience. So there seems to be a pattern if Ms. Williams is correct. But, you know, everybody's had a bad workplace environment, but it's just not tolerated in our society now like it used to be, you know.
Right.
This Mad Men, Madison Avenue attitude towards women that you see, you know, portrayed, you know, from the 60s. It's not going to play now.
That's
so if you're that foolish to be in a supervisory position thinking that you're going to be a supervisor with benefits, or you're going to have your emotional problems unleashed on your employees, it's just not going to work. You know, you're just going to you saw with the governors, he's going to be facing stuff too. You just cannot just be being unprofessional with your employees.
Exactly. Well, one thing that's interesting, I guess his lawyers are suggesting that Inspector General Leah McLaughlin somehow has a conflict of interest because he was the one that lost out to Decatur when Lee McLaughlin was running for re-election. So mm-hmm. Liam lost, Mike Cater won. He's now in office for about 3.5 years, Cater, and McLaughlin is now the Inspector General. Do you think that these people are so simple that they're going to animus, if there is any, against someone like that? I mean, Lee McLaughlin is a brilliant lawyer.
Yes.
You know, I can't imagine he would hold a grudge.
It is a good argument that there would be an appearance of a conflict of interest, but just to subpoena or ask for the records, you know, like, could we please have the canceled checks, you know what I'm saying, showing
mm-hmm.
if you paid the rent,
yeah.
I think should be allowable, but if we're seeing this smoke, if there actually turns out to be fire, I think Mr.
Mm-hmm.
McLaughlin would probably be wise to appoint an independent counsel, but I don't think you should have to
I think he did that.
Okay, I'm behind.
Yeah,
I think he
referred it to some other body. I don't know who
yeah.
or what.
But
who
it
they
is
are.
Just because, you know what, is if you go hire another firm, let's say I make an allegation against Minority Leader Breen, right? And it gets
mm-hmm.
sent over to the AG, and then he decides, you know what, I worked very closely with Mr. Breen. I'm going to hire an independent counsel. Now, here we just
mm-hmm.
gave somebody an $80,000 contract. He starts to look at it. Oh, Brian's full of crap. This guy doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, right? Now
mm-hmm.
we just waste that money. So I believe for Liam, asking for any documentation or subpoenaing documents is valid. But I think if it turns out that there really appears to be impropriety, then I believe they probably should go to an independent counsel.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, one of the big issues.
And I got my law degree at Sears, by the way.
Okay. Well, that's a good place, actually, to the old alma mater. And it's no longer there. I don't know what they did with it.
Right, guys.
<actually. laughs>
Yes.
So actually, I miss them, if you must know.
Oh, I do too.
Well, wanted to ask you about some other things. Evidently, there seems to be an increase. I don't have the statistics, but it seems to be an increase in the number of shootings and killings and stabbings in the city. And suspects are being arrested here left and right, drive-by shootings. Is that specific, you think, to Yonkers? Or I know it's also happening in Mount Vernon, but it's also happening in New York. Is this happening
yes.
all over?
Well, my view on this is, first of all, recently between January and June, I went
yeah.
back going through, different social media posts and different news
mm-hmm.
articles and stuff, and I came up with 45 violent incidents in the city of Yonkers, about
really?
One every 4 days.
Really? 45?
And that
oh
this
God.
Is just my count. It could be even higher, but that's what I was able to
yeah.
locate. Then last year I did the same thing, and this is very time-consuming. I went from January to December, and it was averaging about one every 8 days when I did it the last year. And I shouldn't even have to do this. They have a CopStat program, and like in the city, they list exactly in each precinct how many things happened, what's there, and you can look at it online with the NYPD. But you can't do it in Yonkers, even though they have the data. They won't share it with the public. But
well, actually, I
now,
thought that they stopped using the CompStat, so we still
I
have it.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah,
I understood they had it. They were paying for it, but they weren't sharing it. Oh, he stopped using it. So,
uh-huh.
So I guess
and
you definitely
recent,
can't get.
Recent
you can't boil that
stopped.
Data now. Yeah.
No, not at all. Interesting. I don't know why he stopped it. Another
yeah.
thing, though, when we talk about police. I think you point out as well, roughly 60% of the residents in Yonkers are regarded as of color or define themselves of color. But we have a 600-man police force, and yet we don't have 60% of them are not of color. And the disparity is, I don't even know how many are of color in the city. I doubt even if we have 60, even 10%. So I don't know. I don't know how we're going to make a correction to that. And they're hiring. They want to hire new police officers. They're spending a fortune of money in places that are just really conducive to that. They have a very little interest in working here. And people who work, who reside in Yonkers, they get preferential treatment, but people outside of Yonkers don't. And yet they charge $100 for an application fee to take the test. And now they're so desperate for people to come in that they want police officers who are on the job now to fork over the $100 application fee for people who might be interested to entice them to come in. In New York, what they do is, in order to bring in people of minority status into the fold so that they could balance out the equation, they don't charge them. I don't know why we're charging them, and why should the cops have to fork over the money?
You know, I
don't understand these games.
Well, two things I'd like to say. One, what I was talking about before, yes, there were some law changes. Yes, you know, with this COVID and, you know, people have gotten some people might have got desperate and went down a wrong path. And yes, it appears that the youth gang activity and is up, especially in Yonkers. And that's happening in a lot of places. And it's very easy to anecdotally point at these places and say, oh, it's not just us. It's over here in Brooklyn, too, or something. But there are other communities where it isn't occurring. It is not occurring.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There are other communities that even have urbanist settings that it isn't occurring. And there are successes. I believe it's the strategy of the administration. I don't believe that a handful or a few youth gangs are able to defeat a 600-man Yonkers Police Department, which is backed up with mutual assistance by thousands of officers. You know what I'm saying? And but they only are winning this asymmetrical war is because sometimes there are no patrol cars going down streets. So there are not police officers on the beat, and there are not police officers from those communities. There are police officers from Dutchess County. There's police officers from Putnam County.
Mm-hmm.
There's police officers from Rockland County. There's police officers from living up in Yorktown, you know what I'm saying? But there aren't police officers from Nodine Hill. There aren't police officers that grew up in Southwest Yonkers and other areas. There aren't police officers even from Central Avenue over in the 4th District that grew up there. They're all there. And it seems like when they advertise on cable networks, news networks, that attract an audience of 50-some, all over Westchester County, yes, they get flooded with hundreds of applications from Westchester County, and most of those applications are from white individuals who are coming in to Yonkers and might even have already a bad view of Yonkers, but I want to be in law enforcement so bad, I'll take this opportunity because the Yonkers Police Department's always hiring. They're just not hiring as much in Bedford, you know what I'm saying? They're just not hiring as much in North Salem or in some of these other smaller communities. If I want to be a law enforcement officer, I have to go to New York City or I have to go to Yonkers. So they come here and they come here not understanding Yonkers very much. If you grew up in North Salem and you want to be a police officer, you might not have the same viewpoint of someone that grew up in Southwest Yonkers and wants to be a police officer, or someone of color in Southwest Yonkers and wants to be a police officer. Yeah, okay, I agree with that too. So it's just, to me, I believe they should just leave it to Yonkers residents, number one. Number two, I believe they should reach out to these people in a more effective manner. These young black males and females are not downloading the News 12 app on their Boost phone to watch I don't know, Laura, whatever, do her birthday greetings about some people in Hudson Valley. You know, let's say happy birthday to George, who grew up in Carmel, New York. They're not doing it. But you know what? They're on other. They are reading other news on their phones that originate and actually exist in Yonkers. And if the police department focused on those areas, they would reach these young men and women, and they would have people taking the test. And I get so mad at people that say, well, it's not our fault if they don't apply. It's not our fault if they don't take the test. Like, if they're not, there aren't qualified people in Yonkers that are black or Hispanic or Asian that
they
are
don't
able
promote
to
it here.
Take it. Yeah, yeah,
they
exactly.
don't promote it here.
They don't. They're not made,
you know,
even made to feel welcome at all.
No, not at all. And I don't see a notice of it anywhere, not even a press notice of it.
But it's
so
in these newsletters from city council members, you know what I'm saying? Mike Breen's newsletter will have it, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But there just aren't as many young African-American men and women reading Mike Breen's newsletter about you could join, you know, what is it, be the change,
exactly.
be the change at the Yonkers Police Department. They're just not reading it there. The places that the Yonkers Police Department is choosing to go, you couldn't ask for a better way to attract white officers. You know what I'm saying? It's almost geared to attract white officers. Now, they did go in front of the Dunkin' Donuts in Getty Square and hand out some flyers. You know, and then I guess they can point to that later and say, oh, look, we were in Getty Square, but we didn't get people. It's not our fault. Don't blame me if blacks didn't sign up because we were in Getty Square in front of the Dunkin' Donuts.
Mm. Well, that's not the place
to
be.
Too excited there.
No, it's okay. It's, you know, a little bit of temperature rising is good, but I think that's not the place to be. It's not the location. It's just that you don't reach people there who are, you know, traversing in Getty Square from one bus to the next, or just hanging around. And so that's not the place to reach out to people.
How about rolling out the police command center and a bunch of African American and Hispanic officers over to the Juneteenth event in Trevor Park this weekend? You know what I'm saying?
Well,
what
you're saying is too intelligent. I'm sorry, it probably went over their heads.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you should become the police commissioner because we don't have any brilliant thinking like that going on.
But I'll put it this way, Hezzy, and if you did have these black officers and Hispanic officers there, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And even just saying to them, you know what? If you'll mentor these people who have a sincere interest, you know what I'm saying, just kind of check in with them once a week, we're going to give you time off of your of policing just to make sure this happens. They could be at Trevor Park at Juneteenth. They could have the 20 or 30, 40 officers that they have of color there, or most of them, you know what I'm saying? I don't care if they have to pay overtime. And you know what? Reach out to these African-American young men. Reach out and try to encourage them to come in there. Because I guarantee you there are people that are going to show up at this Juneteenth thing that are young, black, African-American men and women that want to make a difference in their community. That's why they're going to this event.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Correct.
Now,
correct.
You can go and hang out in front of Getty Square, in front of Dunkin' Donuts, and that's your excuse. We did our best. But show up at Juneteenth. Show up with African-American officers that are actually there, and even tell those officers, if you'll mentor these people that are sincerely interested, just check in with them once a week. We're going to give you 2 hours of your time for that. You know what I'm saying? Out of your time.
Yeah, that would be terrific.
And you'll have officer, you'll have young black African-American men and women taking that test, and you'll have them passing that test, and you'll have those officers that the mayor says he wants.
Well,
or you can go and advertise
Latino
on Snooze 12.
Right. Well, let's also not forget the Latino community, and we should have people who speak Spanish as well, fluently.
Mm-hmm.
For many,
that's
many
true.
Reasons.
That's true. Yeah, very good point there. Yes.
Well, one thing that's interesting, I didn't realize this myself, but you noticed it. Yonkers Raceway reopened
to guests, as well as the casino opened up so that you can actually go and gamble in the casino. This is
yes.
huge stuff. So are we coming out of our, you know, Corona 19, you know, pandemic? Things are starting to seemingly open up a bit.
Yes. You want to know something that's
a
little funny, Hezzy?
Pretty good. What?
When people were saying in Yonkers at a lot of places, you got to wear the mask, right? There was some resistance,
mm-hmm.
you know, saying to wearing
yes,
the mask, right?
It was.
Now all of a sudden we're hitting 70%, and I was mentioning this to my wife the other day, right? Because we still wear our masks,
mm-hmm.
even though we're vaccinated. And this, it's just
me too.
I want to set a good example, and two,
mm-hmm.
you know, you still don't know some of these variants, even like this X variant from India could come, and it's,
mm-hmm.
it's been affecting some people. So
yes.
We still wear our masks. But I told my wife the other day, we're walking through Yonkers. And even though they've said, you don't have to wear your mask outside, you know what I'm saying, anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing masks, you know what I'm saying?
I'm seeing
masks,
too.
When you told people to
too.
Wear the mask, they were like, it was hard to get them to put the darn things on. Now you tell them you don't have
right.
to wear the mask. Well, people are wearing the mask now. Or maybe they just got used
That's
to the habit of,
true.
Or became educated enough that the masks really help, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm too vulnerable on so many different levels that I'm keeping my mask on.
Oh, same here.
And I think that I'm comfortable with it. And, you know, it's interesting. I would go to the library quite often to do
mm-hmm.
a little work, and also it's just a different environment. And I saw people who were predominantly Oriental who also visited the library that I went to. And what was interesting
mm-hmm.
is they always wore masks.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's just the way it was. And not
mm-hmm.
because of anything that was going on in China or Japan or wherever they came from. I couldn't define what part of the world they were from, but they seemed Oriental to me
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a Caucasian or an African-American or a Latino.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little different, complexion and features on the eyes and stuff. But
mm-hmm.
I never asked them why they wore it. I thought it would be intrusive, but
mm-hmm.
but I always recognized it, and I thought that was really interesting. And then months and months later, I started wearing it.
Yeah, well,
so,
yeah, I had a similar experience.
Really
even though my wife's Oriental,
yeah.
I go to her church every Sunday, right? And there was
yes.
this, she's got a place she likes to sit, so we sit there. So at this service, I haven't seen this lady for a while, but she used to come and would sit a few pews ahead of us, right? They weren't,
mm-hmm.
This is just right after you started hearing about this. The New Rochelle thing really hadn't happened yet, but you were hearing about the virus at that time. It was in Seattle. There
right.
was a nurse went to Iran, came back and brought it, that kind of stuff, right? So
mm-hmm.
this oil lady was sitting there with the black mask on, right? So I'm
yeah.
talking to my wife, whispering in her ear in church, you know, look at her. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I guess she's worried about the virus. And
yeah.
She's a little too nervous, right? And then, of course, like
mm-hmm.
about 3 weeks later, boom, here it hit, you know, with the person from New Rochelle and, you know, like
right.
1,000 cases all over the place, you know, from New York City
yes.
to Bridgeport kind of thing.
Yeah, I remember when that happened. Amazing.
But I guess if,
well,
you know, with the SARS and the you know, the bird flus and all that kind of stuff, maybe Oriental people are a little more intuned if you've lived through those kind of smaller epidemics.
So.
You know what I'm saying?
I think so. Well, one other issue that came up was about a week and a half ago. Westchester County Executive George Latimer. And Mayor Spano and Jose Alvarado, who represents the 17th Legislative District, showed up
mm-hmm.
and they spoke about a $20 million project, which is going to
mm-hmm.
transform a vacant lot on Fernbrook Street
mm-hmm.
and building a park two
mm-hmm.
and a half to 4 years from now. Along the Hudson River,
near the sewage treatment plant. So it'll be just south of the, it's from the sewage treatment plant all the way up to the sugar factory. And we're going to spend $10 million on the Yonkers site buying the parking lot where the county leaves its buses. But what was the point of bringing this up if it's 2.5 years down the road to 4 years down the road? Is this just a re-election bid?
Well, I think that plays into
really,
it some. Yeah.
Is the money already set aside? Do you know? Have they allocated?
I know that
for it?
They did have. There was a big push in press conferences with Jamal Bowman, and he was going to push for some federal funding, but I didn't hear that it came through. And you are right that they. It sounds lovely. You know what I'm saying? The things that I think it's a walkway all the way from downtown to the sugar factory along the Hudson, like a promenade kind of thing. But there's no drawings. There's no concepts. There's just this is what we'd like to do, and it seems a little rushed. But I hope it goes forward. But you know, they
It'd
still got to
nice,
buy
actually.
A bus lot, and they got to relocate those buses somewhere. You know, build another bus depot.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems like you got everything from, you know, boats docking, you know, on the Hudson to walking, you know, from the Yonkers Amphitheater all the way to the sugar factory.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see, you know. A lot of they promised a lot of things in Ludlow concerning that area around the sewage treatment plant, election after election after election after election after election. So. We'll see if it comes to fruit. I remember when I first came,
you know,
we were talking about being a park in that lot. That was like six years ago.
Well, I remember they've been talking about it for 21 years. I remember the good old days.
Yes. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it really, it goes back that far. It goes back when Andrea Stewart Cousins was the councilwoman, and now she's the majority leader. Of the Senate, and and she's the Senate leader, and then we had Virginia Perez, we also had Jose Alvarado, and it's just been going on and on and on. That's another thing. Jose Alvarado is running for re-election. I hear now that Virginia Perez is also in the race. I didn't realize that she was still involved. And what's his name? London Reyes is also running. So
They're all on the ballot.
Those are the three? They're all on the ballot.
They all made the
ballot.
They're
all running as Democrats.
From what I hear, Virginia's really... knocking on doors and perceived as a real threat, Legislator Alvarado is you know, racking up endorsements from Latimer to the mayor to just about any other elected official or something.
Right.
And I believe he has a Democratic Party endorsement also. But London, I don't know. He just seems to be. He seems to have kind of disappeared. Maybe he's backed off from his desire to get into it. So I haven't heard much from him. I've seen from Mr. Alvarado, well, the park. I've seen with Mr. Alvarado and from Virginia both. They've got palm cards being posted all over. They're just they're going at it. But I haven't heard anything from London's group.
London, no, I haven't heard anything from him either.
Yeah.
One other thing, though, is a little bit frightening as well, is we found out that a Yonkers school secretary accused a former principal of sexual harassment.
Yes.
Does this thing look like it's going to go anywhere? The lawsuit, evidently she's a secretary at the Dodson School.
I believe they filed the suit in federal court, so... I assume the school has to, and Dr. Quesada, the people that are named in her suit, have to respond, and that'll be public record.
It's kind of like what we were referring to before. It's just how, you know, if Cater had anything sexual that I heard of, but, you know, treating employees badly or not following professional norms, how can you be paying a principal, you know, six figures to be calling people into their office to take pictures of her in her underwear, you know, God sakes, in a school, you know what I'm saying? If I went and took my pants off and walked around in my my boxer shorts in front of that school, I would be, I would be in Valhalla. I would be in Valhalla.
You got
it. Getting a psychiatric evaluation. But this lady can do it, and it can be reported to the superintendent and to administrators, and we talked to her about it, you know. So I don't know, but you know, it's just,
I've heard other allegations in the past, but nothing's ever come forward. So this is the first one. You know, like there are a lot of allegations. There are even allegations of impropriety and misconduct by the governor, but no one has filed a lawsuit. The allegations were made, but no lawsuit was ever brought forward. And the same thing, I've heard allegations in the Yonkers Board of Education, but again, no one ever, never did anything about it. So, and people are afraid. That's one of the big issues, isn't it, in the city? People don't talk. They tell you 6 or 10 or 15 years later what they think. Isn't it a little bit too late? Well, what do they think in the process?
After
you know,
the
like,
person's
something happens
long
today,
gone
wait 20
or
years
dead
later?
Or in a nursing home. Yeah. Oh, by the way, this happened, you know, back in, 2002, you know, so.
Right. It's very interesting.
I get a lot of that,
also,
too. And it's very hard to evaluate, you know, so long after
hard.
The fact, if it wasn't brought up then, you know, trying to get documents.
Exactly.
I get a lot of stuff like that.
What about, I didn't even realize this, a body was found in the downtown Yonkers ShopRite parking lot? Would this happen a day or two ago?
No, this happened about a week ago, but I first saw it when Rue went there to film, and then they mentioned it on a couple of newscasts, and then the police department supposedly was going to, you know, update people on who the person was, why they passed away, but they had to wait for the medical examiner. But it's been a week or so, and nothing's came out. And it just seems to be that way with the police department as far as information. You know, you really have getting information out of the police department is like pulling teeth. You know, you might want to know if people are breaking into garages in your neighborhood. If there's been 9 garages broken into within 6 blocks of your home, and you live up in the 6th district, you might want to know this. And you shouldn't be trying to get anecdotal evidence or on social media to get it. It should just be at the Yonkers Police Department site. But they have statistics, and they cherry-pick them, and then they go to these precinct committee meetings, and Captain So-and-so has a really good report about burglaries in the 4th precinct, you know what I'm saying? That they are down by 2%. So we're really doing a great job. Yeah. Everybody claps their hands, and that's it. But no one gets to see all the statistics in real time or even a week later or a month later.
Right.
And oftentimes people are told they're going to release some information later, and it never comes out, and it becomes an old story. Mm-hmm. Even the 4 young men that were mowed down when that police chase where that idiot from Mount Vernon just spewed their bodies all over the place, you know what I'm saying, over an alleged motor vehicle equipment violation. I don't know if he had tinted windows or something. I don't know what it was. His equipment, we don't still even know why they were chasing the guy. And then they have the video, they take the video, and they play around with it. They go into a video editing thing, and they loop it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times, you know, showing the crash, boom, boom, boom. But they won't show when the police car showed up. Was he 10 seconds yeah. behind? Was he 20 seconds behind? Was he a minute behind? Was he 2 minutes behind? Everybody says he was right there,
yeah.
you know, like just right behind him, 10 seconds behind, well, half a block away.
Mm.
And did they even go and get video from other cameras, you know, down the street, one, two, three blocks away, trying
right.
to make it look like there was no chase? And now here it is 6 months later, and these families
In
still have
words,
not been given the video. You know what I'm saying?
No.
It, that
yeah.
happened in December, January, February, March, April, May, June. And we're headed to July.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Correct.
And the police department should do a much better job of just sharing information. And they would find they would have more support in the community if they did. When you make your community think, I'm not telling you the truth, then they don't trust you. But when you just say,
right.
this is it, you know, it is what it is. We've had this
well,
happen, and this
is
what we're doing to solve the problem. And if that doesn't work, we're going to
yeah.
go to Plan B. But in Yonkers,
right.
it's like the Yonkers Police Department never makes a mistake. It's perfect. It does a great job. And
yeah.
love us or leave us,
they
my
just
God.
Like to ply people with donuts and coffee.
yeah.
And that's supposed to make everything go away. Amazing. Just amazing. Well, one very interesting thing that you also pointed out is that Yonkers is receiving $15 billion for emergency rental assistance, and
yes.
over 9,000 families are going to benefit from the city's newly established rental assistance program. How did we accomplish that? $15 billion. So that came from the federal government to the state, and the state dispersed it here to Yonkers?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. I guess courtesy of Mr. Biden, Chuck Schumer, and Dems looking
okay.
out for their constituents. Like you
mm-hmm.
say, it goes to New York and it's coming here. And like we were talking before, how the whole county of Westchester has $1.5 billion or something for a million people, and Yonkers has $1.3 or $1.4 for 200 some thousand people.
Okay.
They give Yonkers its own share, and they gave the county its own share. Yonkers got about
mm-hmm.
as much money as the entire county, which is a good thing in my opinion, because half of the homeless people are right here in Yonkers. You know what I'm saying?
Correct.
So,
right.
so aid like that should be coming to our community, and there are a lot of people that have had a tough time in this pandemic, and it will help them pay their rent and make landlords whole and help with the tax rolls.
Absolutely, because otherwise we would have an unbelievable number of evictions.
Yes.
You know, many people are in arrears. Yeah.
I think it's like 9,000 families will benefit, and
yeah.
the checks go right to the landlord. And like it, we imagine if you had to actually take someone to small claims court with 9,000 evictions on
mm-hmm.
the court docket. Well,
yeah.
we can get to you maybe in the year 2023, Brian.
One other thing, talk about displacement. Many of them are going to be saved by this funding, but then there were a dozen residents who were made homeless after a fire on the multifamily home on Maple Street a couple of weeks ago, and 30 families were left homeless. More than a
yes.
dozen firefighters were injured. Have we heard anything more about that?
You know, Hezzy, this is I'll give this. At least with some of the new HUD money that came in, not the one we were just talking
yeah.
about, they got even more HUD money on top of that.
Right.
$2.5 million the Yonkers got
mm-hmm.
at least this time. They gave it to West Half, and they're going to have this Project Connect that's going to go out and try to reach out to homeless people and then get them
right.
to the county services, you know what I'm saying, to either the county shelter or to get benefits that they're legally and lawfully entitled to, or to get them to
mm-hmm.
mental health services or drug addiction services or employment even, you know what I'm saying, just to be
right.
social workers or be referrals, you know, to people who are actually, you know, homeless and just went down a wrong road in Yonkers. So that's a good thing. Fortunately, the biggest thing that'll make somebody homeless in Yonkers is a fire, because we don't have anything
yeah.
like that for people who well, we're going into fireworks season pretty soon. They'll be shooting off. Well, they already got started shooting off fireworks all night long. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And one of these things hits a roof of a multifamily building, and sometimes if they're joined together like these were on Maple Street, you know, you can lose a couple buildings, and there's like 20 or 30 families lose their homes. And the system they've set up is we refer you to we donate some money to the American Red Cross, New York City. They give you a voucher for a motel room for a couple of days, and you better get things straight with Westchester County because the motel is putting you right out in the street, you know. And some people find relatives, some people find shelters, and some people actually end up on the street. Some people lose their children because of a fire, you know what I'm saying? And we should have a better system. And if it's a really massive fire, then the emergency service office will pull out some cots and let people sleep one until Red Cross can come process them, sleep one night in the palace. You know, especially if the fire starts, say, at 1 in the morning. They'll go to the PAL the next morning. They get their vouchers. They got 2 days, and then they're in the street, you know.
Well, you know what I always wondered? You know, we have the jail, and it's not the nicest place to go to, but it's certainly clean, and it's not in the elements. And you can lock up whatever you want in the cell, so it won't be stolen. You feel secure about that. It could help some people just tidy over until they could find something that's permanent.
You know, that's,
but we don't
that's
seem to use that facility. Well,
we
know,
gave it away. We gave it to what's her name, Maya Lynn. She was going to
But she's not using it.
Oh, she's not?
No,
I was supposed to be. I was going to go enjoy art, sip coffee, and have a jolly old time. But I think they just stored their artworks
there. She was going to store some stuff there, but I don't know what's happened. I don't know if the place is packed. But whatever it is, so maybe that's not available. But I was shocked.
They got a very good price for that building. You know, it's very valuable.
Want to know the
truth? They're not going to give it up. Yeah,
I remember when they ended up buying that place. I think it was over $1 million. Been $1 million. I don't remember whatever the price was. Somebody contacted me after I noticed that I made notice that she was going to buy it with her husband. And what was interesting is that they wanted to offer more money for it. And I called up City Hall. I said, well, they want to offer more. And they wanted to buy it. And they didn't even care who it was. These are very legitimate people. I mean, they had money. And and they were well-known in Yonkers on top of that. And there was no qualms about them buying it. But they didn't want to. They wanted to get the name Maya Lynn into the city. And
oh, really?
I remember...
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't care, and because they worked out, it was a deal. It was a deal worked out, and they got a very good price. And it turned out you couldn't even get a studio apartment in New York City for the amount of money that they're spending on this place. I mean, and the size, it was amazing.
Yes,
but whatever, it is what it is. But,
I've heard a lot of people in the art community. I've heard a lot of people in the art community. One, that there was a lot of promises made, and then I've also heard them say that
they never
apparently
delivered.
Like you said, that the building was given at a discount. It had been listed at this, and let's say they got a 50%, and then there were a bunch of incentives on top of that, and nothing ever changed.
They lowered it.
It just moving vans came in and out whenever she had an exhibit or he needed to share some of his photographs, and it just sits there boarded up kind of thing, you know. With one thing, it's secure for them. No one will touch their artwork, but it became
it's
a storage
facility.
Unit. Yeah,
exactly.
It's not an art facility,
and
it was supposed to be promised.
It was supposed to have parking spots in front of the place so people can come and visit.
Oh, really?
It's never been used for that at all. But they had these grandiose plans, and it really is pathetic that
this was before my time in Yonkers.
Yeah.
but I actually remember reading about this when I lived in Greenwich, reading about this in the Greenwich Times. The Hearst papers were talking about this grand thing that they were going to build in Yonkers.
Wow.
So I remember, you know, it wasn't a big thing. It was just, it was mentioned, it was in the news of the region, right?
Yeah.
So look, you might, you know, people from Greenwich might want to come down and check out this new place that's going to be, you know, appearing in a year or so. Then, five years later, I ended up in Yonkers, and people are complaining like nothing ever happened there, you know.
No, nothing.
The taxpayers funded it. You know, they gave these incentives. They let the property go for cheap, and your taxes go up. You paid for that, but you didn't get the benefits that you were promised. It'd be worth it if there was a cultural institution there, but there's a storage unit there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. So, again, you mentioned the Juneteenth Heritage Committee coming together. And so when is the festival going to take place at Trevor Park?
I believe there's like three events starting this weekend. I should know it better. I know it's they just passed a law in – it's now a federal holiday. They just passed that. New York State just passed a law a week or so ago. I know there's some in the community that thinks that, you know, they see in the past the Hispanic parade and the Irish parades and the celebrations for different groups are, are get a lot of city support and are very grandiose. But I think hopefully now with all this recognition from the state and the federal government, this event that's been happening in Trevor Park and the little parade they do will actually turn into something that's very notable. But
I would hope so.
We'll wait to see. Yeah. It's, you have a population that's 20% African American, so I believe they should have something very, very spectacular for our community. You know, we have a big thing for the Pride Festival. We have a big River Festival. We have a big Irish parade. Not that we've had it because of the pandemic. Big Hispanic parade. So why don't we put a few resources in to make this Juneteenth thing happen?
Well, I think it would make sense. Do you think, though, that the African-American community in Yonkers, is it becoming more engaged now than ever before? Because everything is about voting and getting your voice heard. Are they becoming more involved, or are they being ostracized, or are they secluding themselves from the process? Because we're still not getting a lot of votes from the African-American community.
I'll say this. There is some awareness that there's a lot of power, you know, in being 20% of a population, 20% of a city that has a $1.34 billion budget. There is some awareness of that. And there is some awareness of the establishment. I don't want to sound too cynical, but you know what? All of a sudden, they're looking at Shanae, who might draw an awful lot of support from Mount Vernon and Yonkers, and maybe even New Rochelle to take on this incumbent clerk. The mayor's looking at LaKeisha to go against Mike Cater. I even had someone that was arguing with me that Yonkers was – they still thought Yonkers was 70% white. And I said, no, it's 60% minority. And I said, that's why you have a council that if LaKeisha wins, it'll be a minority-majority council. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So – and you look at the legislators, you know, a couple of seats are going to minorities because this county is this city is has that population, and I believe that people are starting to wake up to it. But do you need a Black Lives Matter movement to get people to pour out the vote, or will people get in the habit of choosing the best candidate that's best for their community? That's the big question.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting if the two are just opposite, you know, BLM is one thing and then voting is another, or I wonder if there's a nuance to the way Yonkers thinks about it. Are we allowing more and more people to vote?
I think the BLM movement motivated a lot of people. You had 1,000 people in the streets, and then you had last time we had the primary voting, the line was going, from the Riverfront Library all the way up past the Phillips Manor Hall. Yep. You know what I'm saying?
Took
and
5 or 6 hours
they weren't white voters.
Vote.
Yeah, you could see all these African American and Hispanic voters. Now the early voting is not so much. You can pretty much just walk in and vote real quick. You know what I'm saying? So I believe the police reform and the other things and the voting turnout was highly affected by that. But it shouldn't we shouldn't have to have a crisis to get people to go out and choose the best thing for them, their family, and their community.
Right, absolutely. It's very well expressed. Unbelievable. So anything else on your mind? Does this
I think you pushed like all my buttons, Hezzy. You're pretty good at this.
Well,
I gave like 100 opinions, but
hey, but that's what it's all about. I think people
you're an expert interviewer.
Well, no, thank you, but you brought up some really heavy points that really needed to be discussed. What are you looking forward to as we look into the future now? Because we will have the primary very, very shortly. Do we have any prognosis of where things are going? Like, for example, Corazon Piñera, she's been running in the 2nd District. She's the incumbent. She's the majority leader of the Democratic Party. I don't think she's got much people that are challenging her as well as one would have thought.
Well, there were a lot of people that got on the ballot
and entrenched.
But they could get like you say a handful of people to get them on the ballot. Okay, the numbers was much lower this year, but they really couldn't drum up a big opposition to her. So it looks like she's going to take this with flying colors, and she is a very smart woman. You got to in the short time that she's been on that council, you know, she for God's sake, she's majority leader. A, you know what I'm saying? B, she's in economic development on the 9th floor with George Latimer, and she has a very big support in Ludlow and especially Southwest Yonkers there. You know what I'm saying? So my hat's off to her. She is she seems very quiet and demure, but that woman is very smart.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you see anything special going on in the race in the 6th District? You've got Anthony Morante, who's the incumbent, and then you've got Tim Hodges, who's challenging him. And it's going to be very interesting because it's really a little bit of country and a little bit of rock and roll. That particular district, the 6th District, is conservative but also liberal. It's hard to balance that out. And it's always been that way. So is it possible that someone like a Hodges, who's really running as a Democrat, has an opportunity and a chance to be conservative enough for the district so that it might be a challenge to a Mr. Morante, who's the incumbent?
Well, I'll say this. I actually saw Mr. Hodges the other day. I was taking the wife to medical appointments. I was at the hospital. And I just off to talk to him. So I said I'd heard that he was knocking on a lot of doors, you know, because people have mentioned or said he was here, blah, 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 you should say more things about him, about that kind of stuff, right? So he said every night after work he's really hitting the talking to people and reaching out. I know his opponent, Stella, I can't pronounce her last name, but
I don't know how to pronounce her last name.
Suchow or something, I think it is.
Something
I know
like
her.
That.
She's a very nice lady, but I know her, but the I can't pronounce her name. I should be able to, but I didn't want to butcher it. She's mostly just been putting up memes, putting things on social media, but I don't really see her out in the community. But Mr. Hodges has been door after door after door after door, street after street after street after street. Yeah. So I would have to say that he's probably going to take this election. Now, when I say who's going to win, I have to give a caveat. I've gotten a lot of elections wrong. I thought Elliott Engel was going to edge out Jamal Bowman, you know what I'm saying? And I've had a few other ones like that. But I'm pretty sure that Mr.
Well,
Hodges
Engel
will defeat Stella. Yes.
So, it was actually Engel that defeated himself. I don't know.
Yeah, that's good. He snatched victory right from, what is it? What's the saying? Snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. So,
yeah, exactly. I think that was the case.
Yes, but in my opinion,
we'll
it's going to be Mr. Hodges. And it's, I don't know how it'll play out between Mr. Morante and Mr. Hodges. It, like you say, it's
it's
they're very
it's
conservative up there, but so.
Oh, did you notice? Did you get a notice? Because I didn't directly from City Hall, but that Anthony Pagano, who used to be the fire commissioner, was redesignated the fire commissioner. He was just rehired again by the mayor.
I did get a notice for that. Yes,
you did.
And he's very popular.
Okay.
Yeah, I did get a notice, and I posted and shared about it, and then he is. He's very popular, so
I didn't get the notice.
Yeah,
though,
it's from
I
the same district here, so.
Yeah, but I didn't get a notice, but I got it through some people who told me about it, so I just only put up a line, because that's all I had, and that was it. But again,
your sources
credible
are very
sources.
Good, Hezzy. If the Department of Justice is going to wiretap, get secret wiretaps for journalists, they should get your source, you and your sources. You've got very good sources in Yonkers.
Well, you know, I know we don't permit that. I don't actually reveal any of my sources.
I know, yes.
Because of conjectured and real retribution. If God forbid somebody knows who spoke to me or who spoke to somebody else.
Let me put it
to
this way,
Hezzy.
What do they call it? Enhanced interrogation was applied to me. There's probably a pretty good chance I might give up a source. You know what I'm saying? But I think they could waterboard you. They could bring in the battery cables, and you're not giving up anybody. I know you. You're a man that's very stubborn on something like that. So.
Oh yeah. Well, you got to be stubborn on some things, right?
I have a low threshold for pain, you know what I'm saying? So if it once it gets
I hear you.
Once they start getting ready to drill my teeth, okay, yes, I'll tell you who told me.
But it's over.
But
it's
I don't
over
think
at that point.
Well, you came from Israel. Were you in the Israeli military when you were there?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, you had to because of the draft, yeah. So, yeah, that's,
yeah
I guess
no,
it's that.
It it's a standard.
That IDF
it's
mentality.
A
you're not talking.
Yeah, exactly. So, you have to be, that's the way it goes. I think everybody does that, no matter what country. So that happens all the time.
Yes.
Well, anyway, any last words, or are we done for the day and we're ready
no,
for
No, I enjoyed it.
Tomorrow's
Friday. We hadn't been able to do it for a while, and it was my fault. I kept having mostly just personal items like medical appointments and stuff get in the way, but I missed A, talking with you on a Thursday, and B, I find it highly enjoyable. So
that was, and I find it as well. It's good to hear your perspective, even though I read your stuff anyway, so you get perspective that way too. So how do people find Yonkers Newswire?
Well,
where
it's, there is a website, but I need to do a better job of maintaining my website like you do. You do an excellent job of keeping your website updated. I'm very lazy and often just putting it on Facebook because, you know, when you drop the thing and you drop a picture, it does everything for you, you know. When you have a website, you're actually crafting. You don't just craft the story. You craft the appearance of the story on your website. You know what I'm saying? It takes time. You know, what can be done on Facebook
it does
in
take time.
2 minutes.
People don't realize
it can take
it
2 hours
post.
On a website. So, but mostly I'm on Facebook in that Yonkers Newswire group.
Well, no, that's good. So what would people just go to Facebook and look up Yonkers Newswire?
Yeah, they type that in and they'll find me there.
Okay.
And then
I just wanted to make sure that people knew how to get there, because
yes,
that's important. You know.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate the little plug.
No,
there.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. So you just take care. Enjoy the weekend. All the best to you and your wife. And we'll speak hopefully next week. There'll be things to talk about then, too.
Oh, it's going to be. Yeah, you'll have
there'll be the primary.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you, if you don't, can I just throw one thing in real quick, if you don't mind?
Absolutely.
You have this thing with Lakeisha and with Mr. Cater, you know, with the sitting president.
Yes,
and there.
Right.
So I can't even call that. I don't know how it's going to play out. You know what I'm saying? It's pretty close in
right.
my mind. But
mm-hmm.
once that's done, then you have the guy Madden, right behind them. And he's not one to be tangled with either. I think he's like a real financial guy, you know what I'm saying? And he's pretty well liked.
He is. You know,
so
what,
whoever wins this Democratic primary thing isn't going to have an easy road.
No, Ron Matten, interestingly enough, used to be a financial officer in the city of Greenwich. We're talking about one of the wealthiest cities in the world. And so that's what he did. And now he works for City College in New York. And he's also a financial officer there as well. And it would be phenomenal to have someone of that capacity. So it's going to be very interesting. So the contest will be between the incumbent, Mike Cater, the challenger,
Lakeisha.
That would be Lakeisha Collins Bellamy, and we'll see who wins there. Very close in my mind as well, and but whoever the winner is there, it's going to end up being
Ron
Matten
on
the other
side.
Yes,
yeah. Right. Congratulations, you won, but you got another hard race. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, but if Mr. Matten was to win, this is a Democratic city, but if Mr. Matten was to win, and he is pretty popular from what I've gathered from talking to
very popular.
I could just see the budget hearings going a whole new way. You know what I'm saying? When someone can actually drill to those numbers, you know what I'm saying? Start calling out the BS. You may have some very interesting budget hearings the year after he's
I would think so. It will be very interesting. You know, that's one thing that I found, and maybe I'm being too difficult. I'm not sure. I think that some people who are in local government, like here and in Mount Vernon and New Rochelle, you know, wherever you look, they just want to be involved and engaged, but they don't necessarily have the wherewithal to really do the job that's required. You know, it's not a penny-ante thing. It's not like, oh, I'm just going to show up. And, you know, it's not opinion. It's quite often it's hard work and study.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I haven't seen the quality of work. I remember Joan Grinowski. She only ran for one term, interestingly enough.
Mm-hmm.
I hated the fact that she decided not to run after one term. And I said, why are you not running again? And she said, because that's what she promised her constituents. And she kept her word. So even though I resented it, I had to respect it, and I do.
Yeah.
But I'm still sick over the fact that she didn't run for another term. And she didn't have a formal education, as a lot of people, you know, in the 70s and late 60s didn't have. Not everyone went to college in those years, but she studied. She was inquisitive. She learned. She knew. She had a great memory and personable. And it was an unusual sight. She was like the anomaly that was there, but she kept her word on everything. It was amazing, and it was such a thrill to watch. But it was short lived, 4 years. Mm-hmm. 4 years, and it took a while to get to know people like that.
I believe in people might say I'm wrong, but because there's so much
you
money,
could be
now,
right.
there's the $1.3 or $4 billion dollars. You know,
people
will probably say, Brian, you couldn't be more hopelessly wrong if you tried. But from my viewpoint, you got $1.3 or $4 billion, right, for only 200-some thousand people. And you have the school getting like 600 plus some million, you know what I'm saying, money. Now, you go to some other communities, like even like a Port Chester, Rice City, or Harrison, or Bedford, or Pound Ridge, or Pleasantville. You're in Thornwood at the schools, right? People are going over to school budgets like mad. They're arguing over this program, that. We should have more for this, that. The library needs this. We need that. We don't have enough counselors. You got parents in there that are slugging it out, and that they, but they actually get to vote for their school board members. So the school board members are highly attentive to these parents coming in, you know what I'm saying? Because you know what? If I don't listen to these people in the 4th District, I'm not going to be on this board next year, you know what I'm saying? And, and if I don't listen to these people over here in Nodine Hill, I'm going to be packing it, you know what I'm saying? Somebody else is going to come take my place. But in Yonkers, you and they have budgets that are a fraction, 5-10% of what we pay. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But in Yonkers, $600 million, and it comes before the city council with a little dog and pony show, and everybody votes for it. Done deal. I wish that we had somebody that, like, say this Ron Matten was to get there or something, right? Or that whoever becomes, if it's Lakeisha becomes the city council president, that, you know what, we're calling in each department head from that school district, and they're each going to go over their budget with us. They're going to justify these expenditures. Because I am convinced that there's just too much fraud, waste, and abuse in that school budget.
Well, I remember last year. I remember last year, Anthony Maranti, who is a CPA, he was going over the budget from the Board of Education, and he saw, he asked about what was $1 million for, and they explained. And then he saw another $1 million somewhere else, and he said, what is this one for? And they explained it was the same thing as the first time they mentioned it. So he said, oh, I just found $1 million.
Yeah.
Because they did a double entry.
Yeah.
And they do that quite often. So we don't know.
Kenzie,
but nobody studied it.
$600 million for 27,000 kids. And we can't teach. Two-thirds of them can't read at grade level or do basic math.
Well, that's
you know what I'm saying? They can't pass these state exams.
Well, that's because we have a large population of people who are new to the country, and there's nothing wrong about that. But where we go wrong is we don't immerse them in English language, and in 6 months' time, they'll be fluent. So they never catch up. And then we have a problem in our schools where even if you don't pass the grades, they push you to the next grade. And until you get kicked out the door after high school.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter what your grades are. It's pathetic.
Without the ability to balance a checkbook or to, you know, read a lease document for an apartment with understanding. You know, it's just a shame that so much money gets spent and no one really goes over it with a fine-tooth comb. I'm not saying I want to cut or defund the schools. I'm proud that we give the schools that money. I just don't feel like it's – and I don't have children in schools. It's just the future of the city is based upon having good schools. People move to a place for good schools. And to have this much money not being used in the most intelligent manner or in the most effective manner is just a sin because, like I said, kids get out of school, they can't balance a checkbook or understand the lease that they're signing. You know what I'm saying?
I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, there was, I think it was an article in the New York Times, and you looked up graduation at Hostos College on the Grand Concourse in the Bronx around the 130s. Is where the school is, and kids graduated, and they found out that kids who spoke Spanish evidently learned in Spanish, but they didn't speak any English, so they didn't even know how to sign their name at the bottom of a page because they didn't understand what it said. And, and these are college graduates.
I can never understand how that works. But again, what's interesting here is that we have a Yonkers Board of Education Board of Trustees. They're supposed to be the bosses and not the superintendent of schools. But it seems that the superintendent of schools tells the Board of Education Board of Trustees what to do. And that's where it goes wrong. And yet it's the Board of Trustees should be talking to the mayor and to give him an analysis of what's going on. And that becomes problematic. And I don't know what we're doing with the money.
And
I really have no
idea
what we're doing with the money.
To show you how independent and how the parents and the homeowners and the just residents aren't being represented on that school board, which is supposed to be independent and having oversight. The when I met with Dr. Quesada and Reverend Lopez, right, they told me, because I had called up a couple of trustees asking them their opinion on something, right? They told me, we have an agreement. When people come to the school, you know, to be on the school board, we agree the only one that can speak to the public or to the press, unless it's like a public meeting, is the school president. You know what I'm saying? And if you ever watch one of the meetings, it's almost like you can't directly put a question to a school board member. You know what I'm saying?
Correct. Right.
You follow what I'm saying? And no one...
I do. And they don't advise people that they have a meeting at all anyway.
Yeah. And
they
no
don't.
One gets
Everything
put on that
on
board
website.
By saying, look, you know, the tests come in year after year after year, and two-thirds of our children cannot read at grade level.
Yeah.
I want to change that school board member. No one gets on the board saying that. They get on the board by, hey, would you like to be on the school board? You know what I'm saying? Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, I went over my
We're
going
to have
so
to resolve that another time because I see we're down to our last minute. So have a great week. I look forward to next Thursday. We'll be talking about the primary. We'll see what the results are.
Yes. All right. Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
All the best to you. Thank you. Goodbye. Well, there we are, folks. That's the end of our broadcast for the day. We'll speak to you tomorrow. And let me just see. I don't remember who we have on for tomorrow. Let me just quickly look. Let's see who we have. One minute here. Almost there. Bear with me a moment. Okay. Oh, tomorrow we're going to be speaking to New York State Assembly member Nader Sayaj. He's going to be on at 10 o'clock. So that'll be very, very interesting. And then I'll catch up with you on international and domestic news after that. Take care, folks. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Goodbye.